it's easy to look at successful people and think, oh, they were born to do what they do. They are defined by their talent and passion, as we find it hard to imagine them doing anything else. Well, what if I told you that I know the president of an autonomous vehicle company who used to be an award-winning fiction writer, or founders of electric and autonomous vehicle companies that were professional snowboarders, or even a nuclear submarine officer that shifted to making EVs? Would you believe me? On today's Future Car Expert episode, we're talking about past life professions. What influence does one's past profession have on one's career path, especially when it's drastically different from what they do now? The inspiration past professions can have on a future one may vary from person to person, but it's interesting to see sometimes how the skills and knowledge we glean from past lives are always in some way applicable, regardless of how big a professional pivot we take. On this Future Car Expert episode, I'm bringing you highlights from conversations with past guests whose previous professions differed sharply from their present ones. To start us off, we'll hear from Barbara Humpton, currently CEO of Siemens USA and its vast technology arsenal that includes mobility, software, sustainable infrastructure, plus much, much more. But in the beginning, Barbara's career was all planned out. She wasn't going to be a tech CEO. She was destined to be a math professor until...
So, Barbara, you grew up in a family of mathematicians. So, obviously, math has probably had a bit of an influence on your life. So, I want you to draw on that mathematical background, and I want you to tell me what your favorite equation is. And you cannot pick equals MC squared because Einstein picked that one. Favorite equation.
Oh, no, the quadratic equation. The quadratic equation is how we square everything up. A quadratic is a hit. And if you want to know my favorite sequence, it's the Fibonacci series. The Fibonacci sequence actually describes and represents relationships that we see all over nature, like a nautilus shell and, you know, the sequence of the growth of chambers.
Well, I got an equation and a sequence. See, it's obvious that math is important for you. You're a mathematician. You were thinking about becoming a teacher, going into education. What happened?
First of all, can I just say, I grew up in a college town. College was what I knew.
Where'd you grow up?
Lexington, Virginia. The Virginia Military Institute, Washington Lee University, our house was right on the boundary line between those two schools. And everyone great in my life was a college professor. And you've heard the old phrase, you can't be what you can't see. I had never been exposed to business whatsoever. I went to Wake Forest University, was going to study to be a math professor like my parents, because what a life. Honestly, it's a great life. So there I was, you know, I won't say whole life plan mapped out by any stretch, but I was surprised senior year at Wake Forest to think, I see all these companies coming to campus and they're talking to students about potential jobs. I wonder if I should just go and wonder if I could land a job. And lo and behold, IBM offered me a job in the 1980s. To become a programmer. Their whole theory was, hey, there's this new thing called computer programming, and we think math majors are going to make the best programmers. They're the ones who are going to get it. They've been trained in logic and all that kind of stuff. And so sure enough, I went to the interview. I got asked to visit at the IBM site. I met the leaders at IBM, heard about the projects they're working on. It was IBM Federal Systems. They were applying IBM's core skills to national security. I mean, this was a way to really make a difference, have an impact, apply technology and do something that would help. I had grown up as a child of the 60s and 70s, you know, surrounded by war and civil disruption. So to have a chance to participate in that, I thought, yeah. What I told my parents is, I'll do that. I'll do that just to get some experience. It'll make me a better professor someday. And I'll tell you, Ed, I'm still saying that. Someday it might make me a better professor.
Mathematicians, is very precise, right? You're trying to develop relationships, get them into equations. How does that help you, do you think, having that background or that understanding, that passion? Oh, that's the right word. Having a passion for math, how does that help you be a better corporate executive?
What's interesting is at IBM, what I discovered is almost my entire management chain had been math majors. So I saw math majors go a long way. And I'll tell you, part of it is because math is a discipline. It's an art. There's so much creativity to mathematics, but then there are rules and laws that organize thinking and principles. So all of that gets called in to play whenever you're making decisions on behalf of a large, complex organization. Some of the just basic tenets of mathematics give you a framework. And actually, the multiple, you know, trial and error, the things, you know, applying models to try to determine, is this the kind of problem that can be solved with this kind of model or that kind of model? All that creativity is powerful in a business environment. That's all good. But here's the thing. You mentioned it right at the beginning. Mathematics is precise. There's something beautiful about solving an equation. It nets to zero.
I see that mathematical passion. Well, I can see it in you now.
What's interesting is that there are a lot of things in life that don't resolve themselves with mathematical satisfaction. And I remember working with people with engineering degrees, and they'd go, yep, Barb, we call that the constant C. We engineers get close enough, and then we just assign a factor and set it aside. And, you know, it's close enough for practical purposes. So learning to actually converse with engineers, learning to work with customers who might actually be politicians, history majors, English majors, all of this, you know, finding a common language is probably the key to it all.
So it was Barbara's mathematical experience that separated her from the crowd when it came to securing a job at IBM. And interestingly enough, part of Barbara's original plan was to gain experience in industry that she could then use to be a better professor someday. Well, who knows? Another pivot may still be in the cards for Barbara. Next, we have Carlo Mondavi, Chief Farming Officer at Monarch Tractor, that makes autonomous electric tractors for sustainable farming. I asked Carlo about his past life as a professional snowboarder and what connections it had to his current profession.
You're also a professional snowboarder. You started a line of skincare products made from grapes. How does a surfing, snowboarding skincare specialist transition from that back to making wine? Because I'm sure you start off when you were young with your grandfather walking in the vineyard, tasting grapes, snowboard. I don't know. It sounds great. Snowboarding and surfing. But then you switch back.
I knew from a young age that I wanted to make wine and be in the wine business. I knew from when I was 7 years old. And it was kind of one of those things where I don't know what my grandfather and father did, but I knew I wanted to do what they do. And then every single year as I worked in the vineyard yard and I worked in the vineyard and then I worked in the cellar, I kept confirming that that's what I wanted to do. Meanwhile, on the side, I grew up in an area where I was skateboarding in Napa and Sonoma, surfing on the Sonoma coast, and then eventually began snowboarding. And I just loved being outdoors. We have great surf spots on the Sonoma coast. It's really cold water and a little bit more off the beaten path than like some of the Point Breaks you find like in Southern California or around the world. But it's one of the most beautiful places to surf. I think it's incredible. And you're surrounded by beautiful kind of little valleys and little areas where they just make some of the best wine in the world. It's a special place.
Surprisingly, Carlo isn't the only professional snowboarder I've had on the Future Car. Jay Gerard, founder and CEO of Damon Motorcycles, that builds AI-driven connected electric motorcycles, was a top-ranking professional snowboarder, something that he said played a part in igniting his entrepreneurial spirit.
Oh, I think there's something about being a snowboarder that prepares you to be an entrepreneur, which is the ability to interpret and manage risk really well. When I was snowboarding, my girlfriend's parents frequently, every week, just couldn't understand why we would do that, how we could do that. I said it countless times because it was the only way it made sense. You don't get out of bed one day and decide to throw yourself off a 100-foot jump. You get there slowly, you know, one incremental step at a time. You take one measured risk after another until you can take what appears to be a very big risk to someone who doesn't have the skill, but it's relative. You know, when you've had enough of that kind of risk taking, you can take other kinds of risks and you can interpret and manage and measure in ways that I can't explain. But I think that's what I'm good at, is managing risk in ways that are too uncomfortable for others, especially with the absence of ever having complete information to make a decision. But you just know that you can and you do. And you know that if you get yourself into trouble, you can work your way out.
I think you have to be comfortable with not having complete information. And some people enjoy that.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Well, that's what makes life exciting. But I think that this idea of you see someone making a jump, you know, this 50, 100 feet through the air, maybe without the rear foot in the bindings. But the key, though, is like you said, you're not going to do that on day one. You're going to take step one, two, who knows, there's 20, 30 steps in between there, and figuring out what those steps are and being patient to not take too big of a step certainly applies to taking jumps with snowboarding. But it's almost, like you said, it's exactly the way you need to think of if you're starting a new company, especially one that's groundbreaking, trying to do something that no one else has ever done.
Next up, Will Graylin, CEO of Indigo Technologies, a sustainable urban mobility company that makes roomy and affordable electric vehicles. Prior to his foray into the world of EVs, Will served in the Navy as a nuclear submarine officer. He explains the importance that learning to serve in the Navy played in shaping him as a businessman and entrepreneur in the world of EVs.
So, speaking of challenges, you ended up being an officer on a nuclear submarine. I think you're our first guest ever that's been on a nuclear submarine, or maybe certainly an officer. What drove you to join the Navy and get on a submarine?
Sometimes it's serendipity, and then you just follow what your heart tells you. I had no intentions at the time when I entered college, but between my junior and senior year, I was fortunate enough to be a co-op student at IBM. I had a mentor named Brian Bachup, who was a former Navy nuke. He was telling me more about the Navy, and I had a fantastic experience with him. Ended up getting a Management Appreciation Award. He was a great influence on me. And when I got back, the recruiters called and I said, hey, let me explore what Brian had gone through. And sure enough, it just seemed like a challenge, you know, studying nuclear power and joining the submarine force. I could certainly always go back to IBM or Microsoft or any of the other companies before going back to grad school. I was committed to going back to grad school, but I figure, let me go ahead and do my service and learn at the same time. So this concept to me of learning to serve and then serving to learn, that circular concept to me was appropriate for me at the time. And now two of my boys are also currently joined the Naval Academy, and they're in there right now. I think they need to serve to learn. Also, keep learning to serve. I think our lifetime goal is really about serving to us. You know, what fulfills us the most, I think, is what impact can we make to serve and to serve others around us. So, and military is only one way of serving. There's many, many different ways of serving. And for me, part of that was giving back to this country, which has given me so much, had, you know, gotten me to, given me scholarships to go to college where my parents couldn't afford to send me to college. It is truly a land of opportunities.
So how did the serve to learn, learn to serve, how did that help you as an entrepreneur?
The Navy was a fantastic experience for a young man in his 20s to learn a level of discipline and a level of leadership. But when I went to MIT, that was when I first really got the entrepreneurial spirit or bug. I had no idea what I was going to do yet coming out of MIT. So after the Navy, I went to MIT for a dual degree program called the Leaders for Manufacturing. And it was a master's in electrical engineering, computer science. You can actually choose different engineering disciplines, and a master's in business at the same time. So the two gave me exposure And this is 1998. By the time I was getting ready to graduate, I was still finishing up my thesis. I caught the entrepreneurial bug. And I also discovered that I had a knack for applying technology towards a marketplace to find a product market fit.
Another guest that has joined the world of EVs is Cartier Brown, a co-founder of Avicar that is using remote reality to race electric cars from hundreds or even thousands of miles away. But before Avicar, Cartier was, and actually still is, an executive producer and screenwriter for Chariot Pictures. It's a production studio that specializes in the creation of hip-hop music videos. Cartier spoke to me a bit about this transition of his, drawing on interesting comparison between music video production and remote reality racing.
You come from the music and movie business. You founded a company called Chariot Pictures. The things we're talking about now is you're going to have these characters in your racing series. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do? You're still at Chariot Pictures. What are some of the movies you've made, music videos? What are the ones you're the most proud of? And how does what you've learned there helping you in what you're doing now?
Good question. One of the videos I think we're proud of, when we've done a few, we've worked with almost everyone we wanted to work with, so that's always a good sign. But one of the videos we're proud of is the video we did with Drake and Meek Mill, pretty big music artists in the hip-hop entertainment space. We got nominated for that video. It was a great video, awesome production, shot it in LA. But I think what music videos, and we've done a ton of videos, and like I said, billions of views globally over a decade, so it's kind of our wheelhouse. But what's interesting for us, because we're dealing with cameras, is a few things. We specialize in short form content, which is more kind of the 250, 5 minute, 20 minutes, 30 minutes short video, short film, intro. We've almost fine-tuned and understood exactly really good ways to hold attention and what's considered cool, what's considered boring. We've learned a lot, I could say, over our years. So I think it works in the sense of motorsports, and I think it works in the sense of sports programming in general, because we're not looking to do the 2 hour long format races. And I still love them. I still watch the 2-3 hour sports events, but shorter format packaged content, things that drive you into, here's the competition, here's these personalities, these guys are going head to head, this is live, and the outcome and the result could be more instantaneous. I think it speaks a little bit to the demographic today than the others.
Last but not least, I sat down with Carl Yanema, who was at the time CEO of Newtonomy and currently is the CEO of Motional, an autonomous vehicle company. I had to ask Carl about his fascinating past foray as an award-winning fictional author and how he applied lessons learned from writing to his role as president of a mobility company.
I have to ask you, Carl, about your background as an author. You have quite a few publications out there, a couple to note, prize-winning publications. A Little Advance is one of them from 1998, which was the winner of the 1998 Playboy College Fiction Contest, and another one, On the Nature of Human Romantic Interaction, which received, it says here, the 2001 Paris Review Discovery Prize. I guess this is from the late 90s, early 2000s. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how the experience in the world as an author has influenced you as a technologist in the world of autonomous cars?
Well, writing has been a big part of my life since I was a kid. You know, when I was growing up, my father was an engineer in the auto industry in the Detroit area. My mother was an aspiring fiction writer. So that was the world of my possible occupation. So I thought I might try both. And for a while, I thought I would be a writer and a novelist when I grew up. Did publish a couple books. Proud of those works. A lot of work goes into writing a book, as I learned. It's a very hard activity, and one, unfortunately, that doesn't ultimately pay the bills. So transition and focus a little bit more on my engineering career since then. But certainly, you know, for me at least, what I appreciated in my writing and my experience from that is really the power of narrative, especially when you think about building an organization, building a company, and helping people understand, really draw a connection to the mission of the company and what you're doing and feel invested in that. It's about telling a story. It's not fiction. You know, I'm not talking about fiction here, but it's about finding a way to communicate with individuals and really both within an organization and then even when you speak externally, when you go explain to the rest of the world why what you're doing is important, it's finding a way to connect to the individual. And so ultimately, the power of narrative, you know, whether you're writing a novel, whether you're writing a short story, whether you're talking to the press, whether we're having this conversation now, it's an important skill to have, something I've thought about a lot over the years. Now, I will tell you, it's certainly not the same thing. Sitting in a room by yourself writing a book is very different than building a company, but something I hope to do again in the future, maybe when I get a little bit more free time.
I think the biggest takeaway from this Future Car Expert episode is don't be afraid of change, of that career pivot, as you never know what the next turn may be as your career path unfolds. So, to bring this episode to a close, I leave you with powerful words from Will Graylin that you just might want to consider the next time you're thinking about making a career change that doesn't match your original plan. This has been Ed Bernardin on the Future Car Expert episode.
Have faith in the path that you're currently on, and don't stress, because the path that you're on ultimately leads you to places that you don't necessarily even expect. Have faith. Keep giving your passion to whatever you're doing, you know, whether it's delivering paper when I was 12 years old, serving as McDonald's person or delivering pizza or joining the Navy. At that time, I still didn't, you know, you never know where the path takes you, but just have faith that you're going somewhere where you're meant to go and put your passion into it and love what you do at the moment.